Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 768. It's the 5th of May 2017. On the podcast today, I have Peter Scott, chairman of BHRD Group. That's BHRD ticker. And Peter talks about their strategy to build a mid-sized company within the digital marketing sector. Also on the podcast, I've got Peter Whale, non-exec director of Strategic Minerals, SML ticker, and Peter talks about their 100% acquisition of Central Australia Rare Earth today. Plus, a man who knows his stuff when it comes to the fundamentals of stocks. It's Russ Mould, investment director at stockbroker AJ Bell, talks about the following stocks: Blue Jay Mining, Distill, and Connect. I also have a new person on the podcast, first time for Dougie Youngson. And I welcome Dougie there, oil and gas research director at FinCap. And he talks about Nautilus Marine Services, ticker there's N-A-U-T. Plus, I also have Simon French, chief economist at Panmure Gordon, talking about oil, which had a bit of a dip of late, non-farm payrolls, and Super Thursday next week. Very big week for UK data. As always, I have the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours and the top five most liked RNSs on the Vox platform this morning.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Peter Scott, chairman of BHRD Group. Ticker there is BHRD. Peter, thanks for joining me.
Good morning to you.
Yeah, I think we spoke last time. It was when you first sort of launched there onto the markets. And so and I've noticed I've been keeping a track of the news. But for people not aware of BHRD Group, Peter, give us a brief summary, if you could, of what you're all about.
Yeah, of course, and thanks for the opportunity. So effectively what we saw before we began was a polarization in the marketing services world. If you go back 4 or 5 years, you had the large behemoths, the WPPs, the Omnicoms and others. You had a middle ground of pure digital play specialists, and then you had some smaller companies who were very focused on what they did, but they lacked scale and they lacked connectivity. What happened in the ensuing period was that the middle ground was hoovered up by the big boys, and so suddenly the market was polarized between the very large and the independents. And we took a look at that and said, this is a bit crazy, because the independents get to a point where they need to change something. There's a point of inflection. And if the only thing they can do is to go and sell to one of the big groups and become a rounding error, that's a bit silly. So let's think about giving a different opportunity. And so we sensed there was an opportunity to link together, to connect digital specialists who would combine to follow the customer journey to provide simpler and quicker solutions to clients, rather than lots of independents all fighting for market share with clients, fighting for budgets, fighting for influence. So we set about that. And in the first 15 months since we reversed into a small shell called Mithril, we've brought four businesses to the market. So we have four businesses inside the group. We're trying to connect and cover the customer journey. So we're covering digital media planning and buying, including search. We're covering analytics and insight. We're covering content, digital content, and we're covering UX design and build. And all of those are connecting into what is now a complex journey, a complex customer journey, which we are beginning to work together to get higher up the pipeline with clients, to help to influence strategy, to help them solve complex problems more quickly, more easily, and to give them better results as a part of that. So we have about 200 digital experts inside the group today. At the moment, we're in four buildings in London, but later this year, we'll move everybody into one building. That's a big part of the cultural development to get that connection, that connectivity working so that we can follow that customer journey and deliver quicker and better solutions. So it's work in progress, but we're happy with where we are. We're very happy with the quality of your partners who've joined and the way they're beginning to work together.
Yeah, well, you certainly haven't been standing still in the last year. You've been doing a lot. So, first of all, I'd like to go into your background, because I've been reading a bit about you, and, you know, you have a lot of experience in this area. And can you take us through some, you know, where you've come from to be here today?
Yeah, a lot of experience normally sort of leads to veterans and seniors if you're playing tennis, but there we are, we won't go there. So my background was advertising. I co-founded an ad agency, took it public, and then morphed it into something called Aegis because we bought into media buying in a big way. We saw that that was the big change happening in the late 80s and the 90s. And Aegis then went on to become the largest independent media buying group and was eventually taken out by Dentsu. I left that industry for 10 years, came back and led the buyback of my original agency, which was WCRS, which had been sold to Havas, and then joined them as executive chairman and then chief executive as well. And then we morphed that into something called the Engine Group. The Engine Group was effectively in the pre-smartphone era, trying to put together an integrated group of businesses that could work together with clients to help solve broader and more complex problems. But it was started in 2004. It had a lot of legacy businesses in there. And as such, we had to teach them new tricks as the digital era moved from being at the margin to becoming mainstream and then becoming the new norm. And we built that up from about 120 people to about 1,100 people in the UK and the US. And that was sold to private equity in 2014. I elected to leave at that point and sat scratching my head for about 5 minutes and then saw this was a really exciting opportunity. So effectively taking digital as the new norm, that's where the money is going, that's where the eyeballs are going, so let's work in that space and let's find great businesses that will do better if they're part of a group rather than narrow in terms of their specialization and their contribution to solving clients' problems. And that's what we're about.
Yeah, and like I said, you've been very busy the first year, but from every release you've put out there, you know, there is this, you know, suggestion, not even suggestion, you are saying, stating that, listen, this is the first bit of this strategy, or it's a long journey here. And so where do you see this going? I mean, the strategy, you know, I mean, at the moment you are a 30 million market cap. Ideally, Peter, where do you want to be?
Ideally, I want to be a lot bigger than 30 million, but that takes us back to the share price, and I won't comment about that. Mm. We've always said that we think there is an opportunity to build a mid-sized group, and we said that that mid-sized group should take 3 to 4 to 5 years to evolve and to emerge. We have four businesses today. What does mid-size mean? Well, we've talked about 100 million or thereabouts in terms of revenue. We're at the moment in the low 20s. So we've got good organic growth. We look at America and we see opportunities in the US to replicate the sort of build. We're not going to rush across to the States. If we go there, we'll want to make sure that it feeds back into our UK businesses. But we want to be able to serve bigger global clients. And so as we build scale in the UK, we'll be looking at the US, which, you know, remains the dominant marketplace, and it's where most of the very large clients are based, to see whether there are opportunities that can help us achieve the goal that we are pursuing.
Yeah, and I was looking at one of your presentations there, and you say when you have all these different parts of the business that can work together, it certainly helps service clients, and you've got an example of Vodafone. Do you want to take us through how that helped in this respect?
Yes, so Vodafone was a new client to the group last year in 2016. We won in a competitive pitch their SEO business. That led to a situation where a lot of the work that we were doing in terms of search and analytics was leading to certain conclusions and certain work that needed to happen internally at Vodafone. That brought us into contact with a new digital experience project that was being run. We could see that there were opportunities for us to work on a broader platform, and Agenda 21 and MMT, which is our UX and design business, began to work together to solve a bigger series of problems for Vodafone. And that relationship is developing now very comfortably. I think we have about 25 people embedded down in Vodafone in Newbury. Working on these projects, And Vodafone today is looking to be our largest client within the group. And I think it's a sign of, you know, for us, it's proof of concept. It's what we've talked about. It's what we've been excited about. We've also had all four companies out 2 weeks ago presenting together to the world's second largest wine producer. The fact that we were invited to present as one, again, underlines for us the proof of concept, which is in a complex world, we're trying to find simpler ways, or we're trying to solve problems quicker, more effectively, more creatively for clients by working together rather than working in silos.
Yeah, and there's quite a few heavyweights who obviously believe in you and the proof of concept here, because your share register is quite impressive, isn't it?
Well, we're pleased to have people like Schroders and Gresham and Nigel Ray and Henderson and others alongside. So we thank them for their support. I think, as you know, 25-26% of shares are held internally. So the board at the top has invested, and all the partners have obviously invested, because normally our position is that they take 35% in Beheard equity. And therefore, creating that alignment between outside shareholders, the board, and the partners who are joining the group is a critical part of the investment story.
Okay, and so if someone follows you on Vox Markets, obviously you can't reveal too much, but what kind of news can they expect to be hearing in the next, say, 3-6 months, Peter?
Well, I guess that's a difficult one for me to say. We've got our AGM next week. I think you can expect us to be pursuing and trying to convert more of the Vodafone stories. You'll probably see us moving into one building. You'll probably see us bringing one or two new partners into the group who can complement what we're doing in terms of the skill sets and following that customer journey. And, you know, we've set out a 3-5 year view and a vision and a roadmap, and effectively we'll be on that continued journey.
Excellent stuff. Okay, well, listen, at Vox Markets, I highlight the top 5 most followed companies every day in the podcast. And if someone's listening now and they like the sound of what you're doing there, Peter, but are not following you, could you give them 3 bullet points as to why they should hit that follow button on your page, please?
Yes, I think the first is that we're swimming with the tide. The new norm in marketing services is digital. It's where the money, it's where the eyeballs are going. And so we're in that place. We're not swimming against the tide. We're going with the tide. We're following the market, and that makes it a much easier journey. Secondly, we've already established proof of concept in the marketplace through the Vodafone story and others which are emerging. So it's not us in theory now. That's where we were 18 months ago. You begin to see proof of concept emerging, and that's in terms of our ability to get higher up the food chain with clients, and obviously they become more important to us. And I think the third thing is that you can see that there is a very strong alignment between the board, between the partners, and between outside shareholders. And that, for us, is a magic part of the story. Because if we are aligned, then we're on a journey together, which is going to benefit everybody in the same way. Yeah. And that's a crucial part of our story to outside investors.
Absolutely. I'd like to add, also, with a voice like that, Peter, you're a born leader. Surely you should be on stage with Brian Blessed, I think.
Well, I'll come over and do a voice test with you.
Excellent. Peter, good to chat to you. Hopefully we'll speak again soon. Thank you very much.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Peter Whale, Non-Executive Director of Strategic Minerals. That's SML ticker. Peter, thanks for coming on.
Hi, Justin. Good morning. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm good. It's nice to chat to you, with voice to voice, because normally we are sort of digital friends. We've conversed on Twitter and on Vox, and I think even LinkedIn, but we've never actually talked voice to voice. It's nice to chat to you, Peter. Very nice to get you on.
Hopefully worth waiting for.
Oh, yes. This date has been in my diary for weeks and months. I've been looking forward to it. I'm going to pop the bubbly in a bit. But first and foremost, we've had John on quite a few times at Strategic, and it's a very popular stock, followed by a lot of people on Vox, so there's a lot of people aware of it. But as always, people listen to the podcast, they're new to the podcast, they're new to some small stocks. So can you give people a reminder now of what Strategic's all about, please, Peter?
Okay, Strategic Minerals is quite unusual in the AIM Resources segment, because it's profitable and it's debt free. And so we're also diversified geographically and across many different minerals. We have three main project areas, one of which drives cash flow and profits. And because we're in a transitionary phase of moving from historically being loss-making and typically having to raise and come to the market, etc., I think the market is finally beginning to give us some credit for that and realizing what's going on, that there has been this change that's happened. And sometimes the market gets ahead of events, sometimes it has to play catch up. And so hard to say where we are with that at the moment, but our projects are very much live and kicking and moving forward. And so there's everything to play for, I think, at this stage.
Yeah, well, do you know what? I was on the verge of pressing the buy button way back when you were, I think, below a penny a share, I think. And John keeps reminding me of that missed opportunity I had. So thanks to John for that. But let's get to the news you released today, and we'll cover off some other bits of first. So the acquisition of Central Australian Rare Earths. Can you explain the detail in this, please, Peter, and also a bit about the actual assets there, please, if you could?
Sure. So we had a 50-50 joint venture with Rarus, our partner in Australia, and there was an option which expired at the end of March, which enabled us to move to 75%, which that option ended up happening. But as we'd communicated in our recent quarterly update, we were in discussions to move to full ownership of this asset. We've been speaking to Rarus and came up with, I think, what's a fairly innovative, mutually beneficial situation in the news that's come out today in granting them some shares in SML. They then get to benefit in both what we do with the project at CARE going forward, but also they get to benefit from the other areas that SML is involved in. So CARE itself is 23 tenements in Western Australia. A very highly prospective area. It has a lot of neurology with some other successful projects and finds. So it has high probability of finding quite a diverse selection of anything from nickel, rare earths, gold. We already have come up with nickel and some platinum, palladium, and our recent reassays surprisingly came up with cobalt, which I do think the market has missed, as the market is very focused on lithium. There are very few cobalt projects out there, so it's a big deal if we can develop one. And cobalt is used in the electric car batteries, and cobalt will have quite a supply shortage coming up. Plus, there's a lot of controversy because most of cobalt comes from Congo and there are child labour issues and lots of bad PR. So if you can pull some cobalt out of a developed country and do it in a proper way, that has to be a positive.
Yeah. Well, do you know what? I think everyone's cottoned on to the lithium side of the new tech, but and it's become a hot commodity. And I think people are slowly cottoning on to how much cobalt is involved in that. And in fact, John did point that out a couple of podcasts ago. So essentially, you've decided to go for 100%. Is that because I assume you think there's a lot of potential here? Is that the case, or what?
Absolutely. And we've had a situation where. I think you've probably seen the SP Angel research note that came out a couple of months back. It is available on our website, and I think Vox shared it as well. But they valued this project at a base valuation of around $6 million. Well, the implied value we've been able to buy in today is around a third of that. So that's a sort of win-win for us, with the scope then to enjoy the upside and beyond. Clearly, if we move forward and we can progress with cobalt, it could be very lucrative. But we'll move forward with the gold and rare earth sides, and we're seeing a bit more interest in rare earths projects and partners to move forward on things like that at the moment. So I think rare earths had problems raising the funding to move forward at a quick pace. Mm-hmm. Now we have full control. We have no issues with funding and moving forward. And particularly with the cobalt analysis, that shouldn't be particularly expensive. It shouldn't take too long. And as we said in the RNS today, we will update the market soon with what the next steps are there. And that should provide some good catalysts going forward.
Okay. All right. And as far as other parts of Strategic Minerals at Cornwall and Cobra, what's happening there, Peter?
Okay. Well, Cobra is clearly a hot area at the moment. It was probably very much under-recognised as a sort of back part of the business, and now it's come to the fore with interest because of the recent new clients, new customers. So there's kind of a quantum move that's coming. As sales have doubled, they're seen to double again, and the margins are actually improving. I'm actually off there next week. John, I think, has gone today, and we're going to have a board meeting out there with John and Alan Broom, our chairman, and Clovis, who's the managing director of Southern Minerals that run the Cobra operation. We've got plenty of meetings planned and spending time at the site and getting to understand the full kind of level of logistics that are going on, especially as we move forward with much higher supply and contracts. So this year for Cobra alone is very, very transitional, and there should be some big things going on. Pole darking is our other area. So
yeah.
the joint venture we have with New Age Exploration of Australia, that's Cornwall Resources Limited. Mm-hmm. So I'm a director of Cornwall Resources on behalf of Strategic. Yeah. We started the drilling program in late March there. The first three drills are all done. We're currently working on the fourth and fifth drills. This is the first stage of the 11-hole program. Everything's going fine. We're working towards getting some assays done. I can't really thank enough the support of the local community, the landowners, and the general interest and enthusiasm for the project from everyone. The local press and the coverage we've had down there, we couldn't have asked for better in terms of people being really keen on what we're doing and moving forward with that. So that's great. Clearly, we know that there's a decent resource there. Can we prove up the high grade and move forward with a viable project? You know, there's a lot of moving parts there in terms of where it can head. But there's a decent chance, I think, that we can make something very meaningful there and participate in the renaissance of mining in the UK.
Yeah, it's nice to have that, isn't it, that local support? Because we often see these days, any company goes into sort of drilling, or there's always a couple of protesters around. You think, well, essentially, you know, there are environmental regulatory guidelines you have to stick to, and it's going to help the economy. Why can't we just back off and, you know, and hopefully stimulate local economies rather than just, you know, stand there and, we don't want any change, you know? So it's nice to see that kind of...
We've hired some people from Cornwall and Devon directly, and then there's been indirect business generated for, you know, whether it's people who we've used to have meetings or people who've done work on landowner sites to improve the access, and we've had some really excellent feedback. So I'm really hoping that continues as we move forward. We've got our shareholder meeting later this month. That's the first time we've done something like that. We've got SP Angel coming along to talk about the cobalt market, to help educate people on what the opportunities are in general, and perhaps they can give some guidance on what they think we may have as well. There's been really solid interest to attend, and I'm encouraged that a lot of the people coming are effectively long-term shareholders, and they're enjoying the journey, which very much remains in progress. I think there's some very happy and supportive shareholders who, anybody who's held for a year or 2 years or something like that is doing very well. And it's rare to actually have a scenario where, particularly on AIM, that you can have a buy and hold situation, and it's been harder to trade the situation, I think.
Yeah, that's good. And apparently it's full up, isn't it? The meeting is no more spaces there, so it's good there, isn't it?
It is. You missed the cut, I think.
Yeah, there we are. I'll have to stay back in my home. Because I love travelling to London. Anyway, you know what's happening, Peter, here at Vox is a system of following. There's a big follow button on your page at Strategic Minerals. So if someone's listening right now and they like what they hear, but they're not following you, could you give us three bullet points as to why they should hit that follow button, please?
certainly. We are a profitable, well-run company. I think that sums it up in four words, really. Large potential from the projects that we're working on, so significant optionality should we make progress. Management aligned with shareholders, both by the way that we communicate and update clearly and fairly, and also by the shareholdings we have and the options.
Excellent, Peter. It's your first time, and it was spot on. Thanks very much for coming on, Peter, and hopefully we'll chat again very soon. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Justin. Cheers.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Russ Mould, Investment Director at stockbroker AJ Bell. You all right, Russ?
I'm very well, Justin. How are you?
Not too bad. How has the week been treating you so far?
It's been very busy, thank you. It's been fast and furious. It's gone by in a flash. And I'm just looking forward to the weekend down in what will hopefully be a sunny Brighton now.
Yeah. Is it me? I don't want to get talking on the weather, be a weather bore. But it's like I get up quite early, and it's even now, it's like, you know, we're in May. It's quite cold, isn't it?
It's pretty parky first thing in the morning. I'm sure there'll be a few companies bleating about the weather over the next few weeks and blame, you know, I don't like companies that blame the weather, generally speaking, because let's face it, we know it's coming and that's just the way it is. But I'm sure there'll be a few weather wobbles coming up, so we'll keep our eyes out for those.
Yeah, it's generally the retailers, isn't it? It's been very cold, and our summer stock hasn't been shifting because of the cold weather and all that.
Or it's been too hot, then when they say, well, it's been too sunny, nobody's bothered to go shopping. So you think, hang on a minute, you can't have it both ways. So,
I know, exactly. Maybe they're just thankful if the weather's not normal. Oh, brilliant, we've got some kind of excuse at last.
Yeah,
and it's been Brexit or the weather, or a combination of both the weather and Brexit this year.
Exactly.
Okay, so what are we looking at stocks-wise this week, Russ?
So three for the week. We've got Blue Jay, which is one that we haven't talked about before, and then we're going to do updates on Connect and Distill.
Okay, yeah, I'm aware of Blue Jay, and because I've had Rod McIlroy, managing director. In fact, I think he was CEO, but he's changed to managing director. But on the podcast quite a few times. Very, very interesting. And do you know what? I nearly took a position in this stock when they were literally about a penny or something, and then a couple of weeks later they were 5p. So, oh my word!
It is one of those, I think. Yeah.
But it's because they're up into Greenland, and they had this resource there. It was, you know, not seen before, and they say it could be a world, you know, beta, this kind of resource. And it's not until they came out months later said, yes, it's looking like it is going to be there. So anyway, talk us through it, Russ.
Yeah, no, and the company, to say the company's very excited, I mean, the share price has been kind of flattish in the sort of 11-12p type range since they acquired the Pituffik project in Greenland. The company changed its name last year from Finost Mining. I know that there's always that golden rule, never back a company that changes its name, but because it's bad luck, because that's what the Royal Navy never changed the name of a ship that it captured. But it used to be Finost. It's now Blue Jay. It was originally a Finnish play on copper and nickel. Now it's this big Greenland project, and it's mineral sands, ilmenite, rutile, zircon, used in paints, plastic, anything that needs a bright colour, basically.
Yeah.
As you say, the company is getting very, very excited about the high grades of ilmenite, particularly that's found in this Greenland project. Now, McIlroy, the two big plus points for it are, one, he's convinced that the company doesn't need huge amounts of capital to actually begin to mine this resource as and when they can get it going. Mm-hmm. They don't need big amounts of infrastructure because they reckon they can ship straight to the US in concentrate form. And also in terms of the actual production, they're going to outsource that to a mining and dredging expert, probably Royal IHC, who's one of the world's leaders in the field. So that is a good sign. The company's got enough cash as it stands, I think, for something over 12 months. There is, therefore, that chance that it needs a little bit more than that if the project takes longer to get off the ground, which may put some people off. So we need to bear that in mind. But it shouldn't be one of these mining companies that needs dollops and dollops and dollops of cash to potentially get things going. There's a few hoops still to jump through. So again, this is by no means, you know, for widows and orphans. There are lots of things that could still go wrong. You know, they're looking to do a feasibility study in the next 3 to 6 months. Then they need an exploitation permit. And then they're looking to start maybe commercial production next year once an offtake agreement is in place. So McIlroy is still going to be a very, very busy guy for the next 12 to 18 months. And the final thing, and funny enough, we've just been talking about the weather, Greenland is not the most hospitable place in the world, is it?
Yeah.
As far as I can tell, they can produce for about 7 months a year and ship for 5 because things get a bit chilly. So it is going to be, you know, a project that we're going to require some skillful handling, but mineral sands are hot, the grades look good. So for very risk-tolerant mining fans, it's definitely one to have on the radar. Anybody who's not into the miners or doesn't like startup companies that aren't generating anything yet, they would probably say, well, thank you, but no thank you. And keep an eye on it, because if it goes, if it all goes according to plan, there will be other chances to climb on board. And clearly, if it goes wrong, then there'll be more money needed and all sorts of different things. So one for the risk-tolerant mining fans. But given that the grades are very exciting, it's the kind of thing that will keep the geologically based investor quite interested, I would think.
Yeah, I think there are two sort of claims to fame. One is that probably the highest grades in the world they came out with. And I had John Mayer from SP Angel on talking about that. He said, well, they wouldn't say that unless they were absolutely convinced. Because there will be a lot of challenges to that. And also, they're very close to saying that, apparently, that it is one of the biggest, you know, resources of this.
They've only explored a certain, a fairly small percentage of the overall project resource as well, barely a quarter. So, you know, there is clearly substantial potential there.
Okay, what's the next stock, Russ?
So let's look at Connect. I mean, we first talked, which is the book newspaper distributor and parcel freight specialist. I mean, we first talked about this stock when it was at sort of 140-odd pence, and now it's down to 125. And that's mainly because the interim results that came out, I think when you were on holiday a couple of weeks ago, didn't impress everybody, let's put it that way. On a stated basis, sales were down 1%, operating profit was down 8%, earnings per share was down 6%. But, you know, as we flagged at the time, this is not for growth players. It's not for momentum players. It's a solidly run company with a balance sheet where net debt is rattling down and free cash flow is positive, and the investment case for it rests with a yield. So momentum players are going to walk away probably. The income players will certainly keep this one on their radar if they haven't got it already. The dividend, despite all of those, you know, flat to down figures in the P&L, the interim dividend was up 3%. And so what you've got here is a stock on a yield of about 7.8% with 1.8 times dividend cover. The debt's going to come down further because they've sold the education and care business. There's about 10 million of costs to come out of the business next year with new IT systems going in. And they're just starting to ramp up on their Pass My Parcel freight and logistics business, a return service for no less than Amazon and also French Connection in the UK. It's interesting, there's been a little bit of nibbly buying from some board members subsequent to the interims, which, you know, not vast amounts of cash, but bits and pieces. So they're obviously keeping the faith. And again, so in overall, the investment case hasn't changed. The numbers are never going to blow people away necessarily. The yield looks really pretty safe. And clearly, there's still capital risk there, as the shares have recently proven. But the dividend looks pretty safe. And you're still waiting for the board, you know. They've been strategically reshaping this company for a while. The sale of education and care is one step. They've made some select acquisitions that look to be bedding down quite nicely. You're kind of being paid to wait to see what their next step is, given that dividend yield. So it's certainly one for the income people, income guys and girls to keep looking at. Momentum, they'll probably go elsewhere.
Yeah, do you know what's interesting? Looking at the chart there, they're pretty much at an all-time low here from when I can scroll back to May 2015. And also, they're on the relative strength index, which is an oscillator there.
Cool.
Oversold, and whenever this has happened in the past, they've literally rallied from oversold positions. It may take a couple of weeks, but I mean, if you do your research and you're looking at this thing, and this could be starting. I always scale in when I invest in a company. I never put a big chunk in straight away. I always scale in, so I think this could be one of the areas good to start scaling in.
I mean, I defer to your technical expertise because I'm more of a fundamental guy. If you take the chart way back, the support levels on the way down from here look to be about 115 and then 100. So, you know, I guess those are your steps down, but if there's another break. But as you say, over the last 3-4 years, this sort of region has generally in the past been a bit of an interesting entry point. So we'll see if that works out this time or not.
Yeah, cool. And the last stop, Russ.
Distill. It is Friday after all, so let's talk a little bit about alcohol. I mean, when we first talked about this one a few weeks ago, it was at 2p a share. Now it's at 3.
Oh.
So I think I think it's fair to say things have happened a little bit more quickly than anybody would have anticipated. And, you know, even the most momentum driven investor might be thinking, you know, that's not bad for a couple of months' work. So I think there may be a few people inclined to just, you know, maybe take some money off the table here, given that you've still got a company with a 15 million market cap that's basically going to just about break even this year and maybe make a small profit next year on sales of about 2 million quid. So although there is clearly enormous potential at the company, there is an element of more expectations now being built into the stock. So anybody with a nervous disposition might be looking to lock in some profits. But there was a strong trading statement in, again, when you were on holiday. Fourth quarter volumes up 25%, revenues up 23%. Chief Executive Chairman Don Golding said that, you know, on balance, revenues and profits will be slightly ahead of market expectations. So all eyes now on the June full year figures. And the other big news was that their Red Leg spiced rum has penetrated another UK supermarket and is being rolled out now. So that's another, you know, good angle to the story. They also talked up sales of their Blackwood gin and Blavod vodka products. So, you know, there are some really interesting brands there. Maybe, you know, not quite what, you know, in the Diageo class quite yet. But you can see the potential for a company that, in the end, given its brand potential, really like to, and given what it's selling, like to think really should make money when currently it's barely break even at about £1.7 million of sales. But the shares have had an absolute massive rocket. If you look at the chart, it now looks like the north face of the Eiger.
It's like a rocket taking off.
I guess some momentum people might want to think, actually, I'm going to run with that. And some might think, actually, 50% in a couple of months. Yeah, you know, let's have a breather, maybe come back at the June figures and take it from there.
Yeah, I'd be inclined to do that. And they seem to be, last couple of trading days, they seem to be consolidating a little bit. Like that peak they had at 3.4, that's going to prove, I think, a bit of a resistance there. So it's almost sit and wait. But, you know, once you see a stock on this kind of trajectory and it pulls back, they often have another leg up, you know, because there's once it starts to move, people jump in, don't they? You know, and you can see the volume on the ticking up once it starts to move. So, interesting. Okay, and I type in this then to look at the chart, and I come up with Disney. Yes. I thought, what's going on there? And,
it is actually Disney's ticker is DIS. That's DISNYSE, I think you'll find, rather than DISA.
Don't get confused because they're two different companies completely.
Ever so slightly.
Yeah. Excellent, Russ. Have a nice weekend. Speak next week.
Take care.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Dougie Youngson, Oil and Gas Research Director at FinCap. Dougie, thanks for coming on.
No problem at all.
It's always nice to have a new voice on there and you know, different perspective on stocks we're talking about. So first and foremost, what company would you want to cover today? What are you looking at?
So today we're going to talk about Nautilus Marine Services.
Nautilus Marine Services, and the ticker there is NAUT. So what do they do, Dougie?
So for those of you with a long memory, this was previously known as Global Energy Development, which was an upstream-focused company operating out of Colombia. Prior to the downturn, the company successfully negotiated the sale of the majority of its assets in Colombia and got $50 million of cash. And really, the company's taken a pause for thought over the last couple of years, given the downturn in the oil price. And now it's re-emerged as an oil services company based out of the Gulf of Mexico and renamed itself Nautilus Marine Services.
Okay, so firstly, I'm thinking at the moment, you know, it's hard being an oil company, but also, even harder, isn't it, being an oil service company, because they rely on the big oil companies, and we know there have been a lot of cutbacks of late. So what's the deal with where they're operating and how are they doing?
So in terms of the oil service sector, whenever the oil price goes down, they're the first things to get cut. And when the oil price goes up, they're the last things to get picked up again. Mm. And really, over the last year, we've seen the oil price double. And that means companies are blowing the dust off various projects which were shelved whenever the oil price tanked. So really, what we're forecasting for the sector more widely, not just for Nautilus, is that 2018 will be the start of the upturn in terms of getting new projects on stream. So I think Nautilus have timed this very well in terms of making the acquisitions that is done and planning to do more of, because really there's been a real dearth of new projects, particularly in the Gulf of Mexico, and really 2018 should be a turning point for the service sector.
Yeah, and I was looking at the chart there, and like I said, they have changed their business, but they've come down from a big height, haven't they? Down to where... I'm scrolling back here. I'm still looking at the chart there. And obviously, I don't have the same business, but it's gone from £1.10 down to 15 pence here. But it seems to have hit a bottom, maybe, or a low around about 10 pence there. So what do you think going forward? What's your thoughts, Dougie?
So really, the reason that the share price went down was because they were in a state of hibernation almost.
Yeah.
And really, back in January, whenever they announced the name change and the acquisitions of the offshore vessels, you know, this is why we've seen the turning point since the beginning of the year. In terms of what happens next, well, they need to bed down the two transactions that they've announced. And the company's been quite open about the fact that it's got cash, is looking at more distressed assets, primarily in the Gulf of Mexico, but they might move a bit further afield down the line. But certainly what we're looking at as the strategy and the next steps for the company is more acquisitions within this offshore services space. What that might look like would be maybe a technology play where they look at drones and ROVs in order to get a bit more breadth to the portfolio. But certainly over the next 12 months, we're not going to be seeing things operationally happening, so to speak. But we will be hearing more about transactions and a broadening of the portfolio more widely.
Yeah, I'm just looking at the assets here as of the 31st of December, and they've got cash there of $16.4 million, and even with their and current liabilities are $2.3 million, so net assets there of $25.6 million. So that is looking good, isn't it, really? I mean, they've got a lot of wiggle room there, haven't they?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, they're cashed up and ready to do interesting things. If you look at the state of the market in the Gulf of Mexico, there are still a lot of distressed assets out there. And Nautilus are in prime position to feed through the people's various portfolios and pick up what they think are going to be interesting and cash generative down the line.
Well, when you think about it, the market cap is showing here, you know, just $5.5 million. And yet they've got net assets of $25 million. That's you know, it's worth looking at, isn't it? Especially at the moment, like you said, in this area. And it was, I'm looking at the chart. They haven't seemed to be affected, but recently we've seen the last few days the oil price tank a little bit. But I'm assuming this is a blip on otherwise bit of a rally that we've had of late. So yeah, going forward, it's interesting. One definitely worth putting on your watch list, isn't it?
Absolutely. You know, they are extremely undervalued. They're actually doing things within the space, and certainly on AIM, you know, if you're looking at stock picking the companies which are actually active and have a portfolio which can move forward, is generally quite a safe place to start.
Yeah, and especially on AIM, it's always worth looking at stock that has cash, because sometimes, you know, as you know, AIM stocks can have an issue raising money, and if they have to do so, it can be at a marginal, massive discount to the current share price. So it's always worth looking at that. Dougie, any other thoughts on that, or are you happy to leave it there?
Just touching on your comments about the oil price, I do think that's been a bit of a blip over the last few days. I think certainly we've got the OPEC meeting coming up next month, and the expectation is that the production cut will be rolled over for another 6 months. So really, I think, you know, the softness that we've seen over the last couple of days won't be long-lived, and certainly as we move into the second half even, the oil price should get substantially stronger.
Yeah, well, it hit follow on Vox Markets, which means they're added to one of the watch lists of mine. I'll definitely keep your track on the news. Thanks for that, Dougie. Hopefully speak again soon.
Thank you.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Simon French, Chief Economist at Panmure Gordon. Are you all right, Si?
Morning, Justin. Very well. Yourself?
Yeah, not too bad. In the world of politics and economics and finance, how has this week been? Has it been interesting?
Oh, it's been a fascinating week. I mean, they're all fascinating at the moment, but we've had a lot of data out from the global PMIs, both manufacturing and services. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of steady as you go in terms of global growth. But I guess the worries have really been led out of China, which has led some commodities, most notably iron ore and oil, significantly lower. And we've seen oil trading around $45 a barrel, which is pretty much as low as for 6 months. And that's really dominated market action this week.
Yeah, is that because... Well, you can tell me why it's because I mean, essentially, I did speak on an earlier podcast about with a trader, and we're saying about this OPEC deal, you know, with also non-OPEC companies. So it's never going to work, because each country are battling for their own side, essentially, and they've never stuck to these kind of agreements anyway. And I just think, you know, once the oil price starts creeping up and becomes more economic for them, they're going to start sneakily producing more, because they need it. They need to do that, you know?
Well, It's a very fair point, but you know, to give your listeners some variety, I'll take a slightly different stance on this, mm-hmm. which is actually OPEC compliance has been fairly decent from what we know on the production wow. cut that they introduced at the back end of last year. But it's really all to do with non-OPEC supply, most notably in the US, which continues to pump upwards of 9.5 million barrels a day. Mm-hmm. And with no sign really that shale oil is responding to lower prices, quite the opposite. It seems to be becoming more and more efficient, and they're just pumping on regardless. And some of the investment numbers that we saw in US Q1 GDP, investment numbers in oil rigging facilities, does suggest that that's going to continue for the rest of the year. And obviously the implications for OPEC is it doesn't matter if they cut, because the US will just pick up the slack.
Yeah.
The other part of the story that I think is slightly different to just over a year ago, because remember, oil was trading at about $28 a barrel in Q1 last year, mm-hmm. is the fact that it's a bit more about demand this time round. There's a few concerns that, particularly in China, and also across the rest of the world, the pickup in growth, which has been very welcome, hasn't yet translated into demand for oil. And actually, if the Chinese economy is just showing signs of moderating, as I said in my intro, then actually what does that mean going forward on the demand side? So a little bit more of a demand side story than a supply side story this time around.
So what is it? I mean, the figures out of China, in my head, I thought they were relatively decent. They're okay, aren't they? But what's happened recently then? Is everything slowing down there now? Or?
Right. So China, let's take a sort of last 12-month view, which is Q1 last year, 2016. There was a real low point in Chinese growth. Huge worries that that would impact the global economy. And remember, the FTSE 100 was trading down around 5,500. Seems strange given where it's trading at today. But that was the backdrop. And then the Chinese authorities, big stimulus program, fiscal stimulus, so spending, reducing taxes, and also monetary stimulus, lending, a lot of lending going on into real estate, but also into the corporate sector. That picked things up in the second half of last year and into Q1. But what I'm just pointing out is the latest data, the PMIs from April, just suggests that sugar rush of stimulus yeah. is just starting to fade. And I think that's what oil traders are worried about, the demand side, are worried about regarding China.
Okay, all right. So, yeah, do you know what? It's China is always now going to be a major player in anything, especially with the commodities and anything that happens mm-hmm. in the world economy, because, like I said, everyone's got their eye on China. And sometimes we worry about...
I'll give you a data point, Justin, which is that more than 28% of growth in the global economy since the financial crisis has come out of China. So, you know, it is, of course, it's a large economy, but its contribution to growth is disproportionate to its size. And that's yeah. why every time commodities take a bit of a blip, you can link it back to Chinese demand because it's so material for growth.
Yeah. OK, what else are you looking at, Si?
Well, later today, non-farm payrolls out of 1:30 UK time. And look, the average has been about 180,000 jobs added over the last quarter. We had a slightly weaker print in March, less than 100,000. But generally speaking, it's a positive jobs market. But I think what people will always look for in the jobs data is not necessarily what they should be looking at this month. So they look for the headline jobs added, and sometimes if they scroll through the fine print, they look for the average wage growth mm-hmm. as an indicator of whether there's any wage inflation that the Fed might respond to. But the thing to look for today, in my view, participation rate. And what's the participation rate? Well, that's the proportion of the population who are actually either working yeah. or seeking work. It's about 68%. But that is somewhat lower than it was ahead of the financial crisis, when it was up about 72-73%. And if Donald Trump and Steve Mnuchin, the Treasury Secretary, want to achieve their 4% growth target, what they really have to do is encourage some of those people who aren't in the labour market, don't want to work, back into work. And that's the real way to grow the economy. So we'll be looking for signs of that number is ticking up.
Mm-hmm. What are they doing then? They're not participating. What are they doing? Just sitting there watching TV?
Well, they are, but there's also an element of early retirement and people not attached to the labour market, you know, living off other sources of income, other sources of wealth. And what is quite interesting is if you look at countries close to home, or country very close to home, so the UK, what they've done in recent years is try and encourage people to extend their working lives. Now, you can argue that that was because, you know, there aren't as much defined benefit pensions out there, but actually it's trying to encourage people in that 55 to 65 age group to stay and work. We obviously saw Prince Philip staying in work well into his 90s, but I mean, there is a whole separate story. But the
goes out and abuses a couple of people, gets a bit of a laugh, and then goes home.
He's great value, isn't he? We'll miss him. But the point being, you know, participation rates, the more people you can get in at any stage of their life into work, the more productive capacity for the economy. And if Donald Trump wants to buck the trend of recent growth performance, he's going to need to encourage people to get off their backside and get into work or start looking for work.
Yeah, okay. And the last item on the list here, Si, what are you looking at?
Well, we'll just have a quick look at the week ahead in the UK. And we've got Super Thursday to look forward to. So when I speak to you next week, we can wrap up what happened on Super Thursday. But why is it super? Well, we get construction output data, the RICS housing survey, industrial output data, trade data. And if that isn't enough for you, then you get the Bank of England's inflation report. And I think we'll just finish off today's podcast with a quick preview of what the MPC will talk about. Mm-hmm. So, of course, I mean, inflation is running at 2.3%. So you might think, well, that's above target. Surely the bank are ready to raise interest rates. But in their March meeting, they voted 8-1 in favor of leaving rates unchanged. And since that meeting, sterling has, of course, strengthened. And the oil price, as we spoke about earlier, has gone down. Both of those should reduce inflation going forward. So really, it is a case of, as you were from the MPC and the Bank of England, no sign of any rate changes anytime soon. And if anything, a little bit of a paring back of some of those inflation worries that sort of have been spooking investors.
Yeah, okay, excellent stuff. I'm looking forward to Super Thursday. They should have a Jim Bowen one, Super Smashing Great Thursday,
Bullseye. Jim Bowen, what a legend.
Lovely Smashing Great. Yeah.
That's good. That's a good impression. I like that.
I always remember that. In fact, I saw a comedian do it. I don't know if it was true. There's the old thing with it. Someone on a council estate wins a speedboat, you know? And you think, brilliant.
In Birmingham, the place furthest away from the sea, of course.
Yeah, I always loved that. Good. What am I going to do with a speedboat, Jim? 66 miles in from the sea. Yeah.
That's Peter Kay, isn't it?
Excellent stuff. Marvellous sight. Speak next week. After Super Thursday. Thanks very much.
Cheers, Justin. Bye-bye.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, Georgian Mining Corporation. That's GEO ticker. At four, Asia Met Resources, ARS ticker. At three, just refloated today, Management Resource Solutions, MRS. At two, N4 Pharma, N4P's ticker there. And number one, there's no surprise here, I did write a blog on the weekend, and this week has been a stellar week. Now, they've risen from up to, I think, almost 1 pence last week to 2 pence this week off the back of amazing volume. Literally 10 times the average daily volume yesterday. And this morning, they'd gone past the average daily volume within 20 minutes. And it's unbelievable. And I do think it's worth reading that blog if you have a few minutes. Because, after the last couple of days' rise, I think there's potential still, a lot of potential here. And Nicola Duke on the chart this morning said at least 3.12 is the first target and over 5 pence the next target. And of course, Beaufort Securities have a target of 21 pence. And they are in a hot sector, you know. They're in Myanmar, the last commercial frontier. And they're in social media. They've got several revenue streams coming online this month. They've got a deal with a massive telecoms network called Telenor. And I just think, you know, there's huge potential out there. And Myanmar is 56 million population there, so it's a massive country. And like I said, they're all getting on the internet, and mobile phones penetration is huge there. Okay, top five most liked RSs on the Vox Markets platform in the last 24 hours. They are at five, Keffi Minerals. Update on Tulu Kapi project and shareholder agreement. That's with the government, Ethiopian government. And it looks like they are getting closer with this deal, this finance deal. Look at this mining production. So hopefully quite optimistic. Because that is still my first pick in my 1,000 to 1 million pound challenge in 10 trades or less. So it's still on, but it's taken a lot longer than I thought. But it's Keffi there. At four, Ascent Resources. IPPC appeal. At three, Strategic Minerals, SML, acquisition of Central Australia Rare Earths. I talked about that with Peter early on. At two, Motif Bio, direct exchange. And they've really have signed a heavyweight to the board. And I can't help thinking this will probably help them with the financing to get through to the Revive 2 of Phase 3. And at number one, URU Metals Investee Company Update. And that's, of course, about MRS there. And that's the most liked RNS on Vox Markets platform today. I almost couldn't say the word platform there. Anyway, that's it for the weekend. What am I talking about? That's it for the weekday podcast. Have a nice day. Thanks for listening. Hopefully there will be a weekend podcast, so stay tuned. And I do appreciate you listening. Thank you very much. Muchos appreciatos.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.